319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. When he campaigned for governor, Westmore floated the idea of a year of service for Maryland high school students. Now that he is governor, that idea has blossomed into a new cabinet-level position, the Maryland Department of Service and Civic Innovation. Its first secretary is Paul Montero. Tonight, we talk about this new idea and what it may mean, not only for young Marylanders, but others interested in community service. My guest tonight is Secretary Paul Montero. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Mr. Secretary, thank you so much for coming in.
My pleasure, Mr. Fisher. Good to see you.
And congratulations.
Thank you. God is good.
Yes, indeed. All the time.
That's right, man.
All the time. This is a new, as I said, cabinet-level position. Give us a working definition of what this department is supposed to do.
Sure. In a sense, it's the home of the service year option that the governor campaigned on, and the home of the infrastructure that promotes volunteerism and civic engagement across the state. There's existing parts of state government that predate the Moore administration, the Governor's Office on Service and Volunteerism that administer all the AmeriCorps programs, the Volunteer Maryland Office. So those now come under the new department as we build an infrastructure to launch the service year option and Maryland Corps in the fall.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me about this service year option. Certainly on the face of it, it may sound like a good idea. I can't say that I know any parent who would not want their child to have an understanding of what it means to serve others, even if it is in a paid capacity.
Mm-hmm. It's the governor's attempt to tap into the power of service. The authorizing legislation is called the SERVE Act, serving every region through vocational education. And the idea is creating Maryland Corps that has two streams, service year option for people who got their GED or just graduated high school or up to 3 years out. It's a year of vocational discernment. You're coming up, walking across that stage, but you don't yet know, is college for me? Or if I go to college, what am I going to study? Or I know I don't want to go to college, but I don't know what kind of career I want to have. So instead of, my first job was Popeyes, nothing against Popeyes, but it wasn't setting me up for...
I was McDonald's.
Okay, so
then there's that.
Yeah, there you go.
Right,
so, yeah, and it worked out for us. But what if you had a year, and this is a luxury usually reserved to people coming from more privileged backgrounds. What if you had a year where you could be paid a living wage, assigned an on-site mentor, have a choice in terms of where you are going to serve, and service could include the traditional nonprofit space, but game changer... Service could also include a for-profit business, an apprenticeship program, a software company, a financial institution. And over the course of a full-time year of service, you're being developed. You're being able to kick the tires, cultivate your soft and hard skills. And at the end of the term, you get $6,000 in a 529 account towards college or a cash stipend for the down payment on that car or apartment to help you start your life. And so making sure we're giving all of our graduates a bridge to that next thing. So they're not caught in the trap of you graduated, but to what? Hanging out at your mom's house or worse, hanging out in the street, caught up in things that would be unproductive. The second stream is Maryland Corps, and it's for people of any age. And that's equally exciting to me because how many people do I in my own family, but in my community across the state do we know? Whatever life dealt them, they went down a road, it was a dead end, or the career ended, or the industry went away. They're looking to retool, reskill, get back in the labor force. This will be a pathway back. And again, a person, you could be 42. You might be returning from incarceration. You paid your debt, you made a mistake. You're now looking to make responsible choices and get back into community. This is going to be a solid pathway back because in Maryland, as the governor always says, leaving no one behind means we don't throw folks away because they made a mistake.
Mm-hmm. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking to Secretary Paul Montero. He is the secretary of the new Maryland cabinet level position, the Department of Service and Civic Innovation. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Why not make this a requirement for graduation from high school?
So the state currently has a service hour requirement, mm-hmm. that all, you know, all Maryland graduates have to do to walk across that stage. This was sort of beyond, once you finish your K-12 schooling, it's how do we make you the most competitive in the workforce? Or again, and you see with the numbers, this Gen Z cohort is very much already questioning the value proposition of college. You see it with applications across the board. Howard is exceptional in that. I think we hit 30,000 this cycle, so the demand is still high. But generally speaking, look at colleges across the U.S. This generation, the cohort scarred by COVID, they definitely had the remote learning situation, the Zoom classes and all that. And they're coming out now and saying, I'm not convinced that college is the move for me. How am I going to spend my career? And they very much want choice. So if you're thinking about a career, you can get some of it through internships or summer jobs in high school. But this is a year in the working world, is serving the state, again, through a nonprofit or for-profit. And this is the state investing in its people for that next thing.
So let me ask you, let me make sure I understand. So if I'm a parent and I have a student who's just graduated from high school, and let's assume for the sake of this conversation that all of the moving pieces are in place, would this be a state job, or would it be, or would I be paid by, or would my child, I should say, be paid by the organization that I am working with or for?
Yeah, it's a great question. And one of the beauties of how we're structured is that we are a state agency. We're the 24th state agency, but we have gift authority. So we can accept funds from the private sector. We can accept philanthropic dollars. And I think that's going to be a great way for us to grow. As you know, there's six Fortune 100 companies in the state of Maryland. If I go to them and say, you're looking for talent, you have a workforce development pipeline problem, or you're looking for a pathway for the next cohort of talent, I'm happy to talk to you about service your option to build a pathway into your company, but I'm also going to ask you to help pay for it because you have the revenues that would support it. If I was talking to a small nonprofit or a small business, I would be less inclined to say the state's going to underwrite the cost of this core because you're a small operation that hopefully grows. But we're going to work through a lot of intermediaries. There are nonprofits or companies that are of the sort of, they have the infrastructure to sort of handle a larger number of slots. But this is very much the pilot year. The CERV Act that creates us has numerical targets we have to hit. This year, in the fall, a core of at least 200, probably 250. A year from now, it's 500. 2 years from now, it's 1,100. And then 3 years from now, it's 2,000. Mm-hmm. So continuing to grow. And again, my hope is that we can continue to grow even past those numbers with partnering in the private sector.
But to be clear, what kind of funding would the state have to put out for this to really blossom into the full flower of what your vision is? And by default, of course, the governor's division. I mean, other than giving you an office and giving you a staff, mm-hmm. Can the state afford to pay for something like that? We know that the governor, you know, had bemoaned the fact that the state didn't have the money to do everything that he wanted to do in his first, months in our office with this legislative session.
Yeah, I think the General Assembly has invested in this vision. We're not going to have a massive staff compared to other state agencies. We don't need that. It's going to be more partnering with, again, the nonprofit, for-profit, apprenticeship, labor unions, chambers of commerce, partnering with employers to create this pathway and supporting them with $15 an hour, the $6,000 at the end of the term, on-site mentors or mentors elsewhere, investing in our folks. This is an investment in the state. As you look at, especially, Western Panhandle, Eastern Shore, first thing that comes up is brain drain. They're graduating and leaving. Mm-hmm. How do we hold our people in place? If we don't invest in them, that's a future entrepreneur, business owner, wealth creator that moves to West Virginia or moves to Delaware or moves to a neighboring state. So this is an investment in Maryland's future by investing in our most important asset, our people. And again, you look at the talent. You graduated high school, but there was a gap there in terms of you didn't know what was coming next, and you missed 6 months, a year, just gets on an inertia, and then you look up and a couple years has gone by. This program is very much to give people a bridge to their next thing, to tap into whatever it is brings them purpose and puts them on a pathway that they will continue serving even as they find their professional home.
A lot of folks want to get in on this conversation. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking to Paul Montero, the Secretary of the Maryland Department of Service and Civic Innovation. This is a new cabinet-level position under the administration of Governor Wes Moore. Let's go to Pam. Pam, calling from Upper Marlboro. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, good evening, both.
Go right ahead.
My question will be, I'm an educator, and I'm listening to the secretary talking about this new path for the graduates. I would like to know if this will work for undocumented students. Thank you.
Interesting question. Thank you for your phone call, Pam, Mr. Secretary.
Yeah, thank you for the question, Pam, and thanks for your service as an educator. I'm a proud alumni of PGCPS. We're trying to make this as inclusive a program as possible. There will be an application process where we'll look at, the statements from individuals who want to serve in the program, different skills that they would bring, and their professional interests. Because in the first cohort, we're going to have certain destinations. State jobs may be one of the destinations in addition to the other ones I mentioned. So in terms of who gets to serve, we want to make sure that especially the first cohort, but every subsequent one looks like the state and in every way, regionally and in every other way.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Diane calling from Brandywine, Maryland. Diane, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, thank you. Good evening. I'm calling because I'm 72 years old. And I still have a lot of energy. I'm still wanting to work in the workforce. But I'm running into a lot of roadblocks because of my age. And I want to know if this program includes people that are seniors and that are still viable and ready to work.
Absolutely. And I'm one of the things I'm most excited about is building for those that are serving in this core, to my point about making it look like the state, intergenerational cohorts. I am not going to send an individual to a company or any destination by themselves. We're going to send them in a small group. And having a diversity of ages and experiences, I think a lot of learning will come from that. And the mentoring piece, putting up the call for mentors. There's so many in our state, people that had amazing careers in any number of different fields who can only watch so much Price is Right or play so much tennis. You know, they if we asked them to be a mentor, talk to a young person who says, I'm interested in the career you had. I'm thinking about doing that myself. Would you talk to them, have coffee with them, take a walk with them? I'm sure a number of people would say, I have value I want to give. No one asked me. And so building a mentor bank in addition to recruiting folks for Maryland Corps to serve in our program and having intergenerational cores, that's very much top of mind.
All right, Diane, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking with the Secretary of the Maryland Department of Service and Civic Innovation, Paul Montero, about the office and what it means for not only young people in the state, but all people in the state as they try to develop an interest in community service. Let me go to Ray, calling from Upper Marlboro. Ray, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, thank you.
Sure.
I applaud the program and so forth and things, but for some apparent reason, these governors and politicians, but why isn't the focus on putting the trays back in the school. All that money, you $6,000 you're about to give an individual to do something. Why that money not focus on catching the youth while they still in school and putting the trays back? And then you can eliminate at this point where you at now, trying to get people to pull them in. If you get the trays back, they got an idea where they at. They know what they doing. I came out of Spingarn. I came out of Phelps when they had those programs and stuff. And now I'm a licensed plumber about to take my master's. And if it didn't have those programs in school, I wouldn't be here. So,
Ray, I'm about to take a break, but if you can hang on and I'll get the answer from the secretary on the other side. Also, Marla calling from Maryland. We're going to talk to you. Ali calling from Maryland. You are also up next. We will continue our conversation with the new secretary of the Maryland Department of Service and Civic Innovation, Secretary Paul Montero. We're going to take a break, but don't forget you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com, or you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. As I said, if you're on the phone, hang on. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. This conversation continues in just a few seconds on Sirius XM Channel 141. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're talking about the new Maryland Department of Service and Civic Innovation and what it may mean for young Marylanders and others interested in community service. My guest tonight is Secretary Paul Montero. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Mr. Secretary, but you heard the question before the break. Ray was asking about trades education in schools. Obviously, you're not with the Department of Education, but I understand why these two issues may seem to intersect.
Yeah, sure. No, and I say this as the son of a roofer who tried to talk me out of college because he said, we can make this money on this roof now. Sally Mae's not going to, you know,
really?
Why are you going to college?
Wow.
So I get it. And one of my brothers, Local 5, saved his life.
Okay.
You know, made some wrong choices, but that plumbing union got him back on the track and he became a master plumber. So, and even in my time on the school board in Prince George County, which I know best in the state just because I'm from there is, you know, there's a whole range of career technical education tracks that are there, not fully enrolled for reasons that are probably another show. With this program, we are very much intentional about building pipelines into labor and trades. We will have people serving at apprenticeship programs, plumbing. We will have people serving at pathways that lead to good union jobs. So I take the point you're making, Ray, about, you know, the broader question of why did as a country we take the trades out of public education, and we now see the mistake that was. As far as what we're trying to build in Maryland is very much trying to connect a pathway back for those who are interested in that field to get
after high school.
As you graduate high school, you can go on a pathway to, you know, advance your certification.
Ray, thank you so much for your question. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Marla calling from Maryland. Marla, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Sure. I'm just calling to ask, how can you either work part-time after I get off work, or how can I volunteer to help set up a program like that and expand it? That is so important. It would be great for the state.
Did you hear a question?
Yeah, how can you work to set up a place that hosts folks serving in the service or option? Is that the...
No, I'm saying how can you work with your program?
How do you sign up?
How can I work as a...
Thank you, Marla.
How can I actually work to help you set this up?
I appreciate that. Yeah, we're going to have a portal that goes live next month where we will be recruiting employers, mentors, and the people that want to serve. So that will be the first step. And once that goes live, we'll make sure Harold Fisher and the Howard University Network get that link, because we want to bank folks that want to be a part of what we're building. That's very much on the civic innovation side, beyond Maryland Corps and Service Your Option. The governor is very focused on how do we tap into that culture of service that's very present in Maryland, whether it's in people's houses of worship or through their Greek lettered organizations or affinity groups. We're serving. It's how do we serve together in a way that builds connectivity across communities that are otherwise divided. My time at the Justice Department, we were usually coming into communities after something had gone wrong.
Yeah.
And it was clear to all of us when we would show up, you know, this part of town had been written off in a lot of ways before we got here. Look at the state of the schools, the state of the investment, the state of the private sector, the state of the physical environment, the state of the housing stock. And you can't do the two societies side by side for long. Something's going to happen that reminds you how connected you are. And service is one of the boldest ways we're going to use to try to start knitting the fabric of this state back together for it to be Maryland's decade, as the governor always says.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, as he said, Marla, when the opportunity comes up, when things get, you know, up and running, the portals and the other inroads into this, you know, new idea, you know, we will have that information here. It, certainly it'll be a newsworthy item.
Yes, thank you.
And so we'll keep you abreast. Thank you so much. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Ollie, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Ollie, are you there?
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Go right ahead.
Good evening, sir and secretary and all. I was calling to see if the program has any partnership with the Department of Disability Administration. So helping those who with an intellectual or developmental disability, where there be contingencies or things in place to support those with a disability who learn differently but need a person-centered, tailored space to work in, where there be supports provided for those so that they can participate in the program.
Absolutely, Ollie. I appreciate that question. And to the point earlier of making sure that the Corps looks like the state, making sure our neighbors, our fellow Marylanders with disabilities are part of the cohort, especially as we launch in the fall. I used to be on the board of an autism foundation that was focused on connecting people on the spectrum with meaningful work opportunities. And there was so much value they could add to particular industries where their disability did not hinder them in any way. And these were lucrative jobs. And so I've seen firsthand the power of just finding the right match, putting them in environments where they can be successful that taps into their learning ability and the skills that they bring.
Mm. Ollie, thank you so much. Let's go to Emmanuel, calling from Upper Marlboro. Emmanuel, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening. Yes, I was just wanting to know if the program will offer like GED or further education in high school for young men or women who just did not, for whatever reason, make it through graduation or to complete their high school diploma. Would it offer them a chance to do that and then go forward into a skill trade or something?
Not at this time. The way our authorizing legislation is set up, a prerequisite for one to be in the program is they have to have a GED or a public high school diploma, and then we'll continue to grow them through professional development. But as we move forward, again, you know, legislation can be amended or revised. At this time, it requires a GED or high school diploma.
So if they do have one, if they do get the GED, does it matter how old they are to enter into the skill trade type work that you have for?
No, sir. The service year option is the age limited stream. It's GED or high school graduate within the last 3 years. But the Maryland course stream is not age limited. That could be someone of any age.
The Maryland Corps.
Maryland Corps. Okay. Yes, sir.
Emmanuel, thank you so much for your phone call. I want to piggyback on Emmanuel's question. I guess it's been almost a decade now since you were, you know, director, national director of AmeriCorps Volunteers in Service to America Vista. Mm-hmm. You know, setting aside, the criticism of AmeriCorps as a whole, but this is a fascinating undertaking. In Maryland, what did you learn from your work under the Obama administration from AmeriCorps that you want to get right here, that, you know, when you saw that AmeriCorps was not always perfect.
Yeah, and I'll start with saying I love AmeriCorps. I love AmeriCorps, full stop, period. It's an amazing program. So, period. What I would say I learned was, one, sometimes really well-intentioned people who have never lived the experience of living through poverty will make decisions for people living in poverty. And a good example of that was Vista, when I came in, had a prohibition. If I catch you as an AmeriCorps Vista member working, cutting hair on the side, I have to terminate you, because we have a policy that says you can't supplement your income.
No side hustles.
No side hustles, because you need to be in solidarity with the low-income community. We don't want you in a superior economic position. You're going to live in poverty with these folks and not in any way feel better than them, which it's noble. Sounds good. But as a practical matter, I look across the street, an AmeriCorps Vista member whose parents are paying her rent. I don't say anything to her. And I know the little stipend I'm paying, that's fun money. You know, you don't have to worry about rent, car, clothes. You're good. And so the disparity in how we dealt with these folks, again, somebody cutting hair to stay in our program, coming from a place where the family didn't have money to give them, they're working to stay in our service program, versus someone who this is, you know, what they're doing and they have a cushion. And I had to fight to change that policy, because as applied, we had entire states where there wasn't a member of color serving as an AmeriCorps, and not surprising, right? It's like you can't afford to. And so we, over 6 months, changed that policy to say you can have a side hustle, we won't terminate you. And you immediately started to see the diversity increase. There's still, you know, improvement that's needed, but I think there were a lot of policies that were well-intentioned but not really connected. And then I think secondly, and this is just the way the AmeriCorps is set up, you can't partner with for-profit businesses. I could put you in a Boys and Girls Club, a nonprofit. I could put you in a state senator's office, a county executive's office. I can't put you in a for-profit. With this and what we're building, we can. And that is one of the most exciting things to me. I love working with the nonprofits. We're going to continue working with the nonprofits. But that next generation of entrepreneurs in this state, and the governor loves talking about work, wages, and wealth. And as much as we should be training the next cohort of the building trades, the skilled laborers, good union jobs, public educators, public health professionals. What about the next cohort of you know, change makers, employers, wealth creators? And I think that being able to partner with the for-profit sector is going to be a material difference between what AmeriCorps could and couldn't do. So I see this as a continuation and building off of what AmeriCorps has done. We have more than a dozen current AmeriCorps programs going on in the state. And that we're going to dovetail and align with those to leverage them. I'm in no way walking away from AmeriCorps. I think it's a great program that, you know, is in the process of taking a hard look at how do they need to retool for the next decade.
I think one of the other sides of this is the service side. And it, as we know that there are parts of the community, of this country, where you have people who are just born to serve, are born to volunteer, no matter what their socioeconomic background. I mean, you have, as we know, we have, you know, wealthy families where, you know, spouses are professional volunteers. But we also have people who volunteer in homeless shelters and churches, feeding the hungry, you know, and the like. But we also are in some could argue a point in America's history. It's almost like the 80s in Wall Street. Greed is good, and people are less willing to give, not only of their money, but of their time. How do you believe, if you do, that your work in this office will help inspire Marylanders to give more of their time without receiving, a financial reward?
Yeah, I'm very bullish on the idea that if we calibrate our requests of people in Maryland, you know, we don't ask them to do something overly burdensome, something outside of their skill set, something, you know, outside of their comfort zone. If we calibrate and ask them things that, you know, are built on their years of experience in a profession or a network that they have or a skill that they know or a trade that they mastered, and would you give to someone else who's coming behind you and share the knowledge in a way that was safe, that did not set you up for, you know, some negative blowback? They would say yes. They would want to. And you see it again in the volunteer hours that people do, not just on the holidays, but through service week in, week out, again, through the houses of worship and on all the organizations they might be a part of. This department is very much going to be focused on how do we connect needs and resources. You know, people would volunteer if they knew these are the needs in your zip code. And these are people in your network who are connected to those organizations that need help. Lowering the barrier to entry to say, well, this is not, it's not weird for me to show up. Two of my friends are serving there now. I didn't know that, but we're connecting the dots and giving people a way to see that there's a path to give back that doesn't require, you know, a financial remuneration. But again, on the other side, because I don't see any contradiction in providing some financial floor for people serving in the Service Your Option in Maryland Corps. Again, this is an investment in our people to keep them here, to cultivate their minds and their competitiveness in this economy and keep them rooted in Maryland. You see entire other states now, they're hurting population-wise as people vote with their feet and mm-hmm. they can move to other places. For this to be Maryland's decade, we have to keep our human capital here and invest in them. And I think we'll get more than our return on the investment because $15 an hour, you know, no one's walking away as a millionaire. It's just allowing them to focus on, I can live and focus on my service and grow and hopefully give back to the person coming behind me. So we're going to keep lifting up ways that people can give back. I'm again, very bullish on the idea that if we calibrate our asks and ask them appropriate things, they would rise to the occasion. And I'm incredibly excited about the seniors. I think, you know, if we were to ask them to do things, to give to the next generation, they're looking for ways to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you getting any pushback at all from the business community? What kind of conversations have you begun to have with them?
No pushback because, again, from a pure workforce development pipeline standpoint, I have a bunch of H-1B employees. I went overseas to get folks. I had to pay a pretty penny, and I got folks to do these jobs. I would much rather, just from a purely financial standpoint, have skilled people who are, you know, from Maryland mm-hmm. that I could bring into the organization and train them up. Mm-hmm. So the business community, as far as I've seen so far, I'm 43 days in, is very excited about this as a talent pipeline. Even when I was going through my nomination process with the Senate, Republicans were very excited about this because they're looking at the brain drain. You know, it's like, how do I keep my kids here? You know, they're graduating and leaving. The industry here needs, you know, they don't see opportunity here. And so this service year will be a good way to provide a pipeline into local industry, give them a shot to stay rooted where they are, and grow their communities and their economies in place.
You know, it's funny you should mention that. Years ago, a friend of mine who lived in Harford County said that when she watched the young black girls who graduated from high school in Harford County, when they went away to college, they didn't come back. And it was interesting because no matter what their majors happened to be, and certainly this is anecdotal, but she was saying that for these young black girls who are now young black women with college degrees, did not really see a place, at least in that part, you know, of the state for them, the place that they were familiar with. And we're not talking about a large number of them. But, you know, this seems to me to be, you know, to paint a picture or to change a perception, like you said, that once you go to Bowie State or the University of Maryland or Coppin or Morgan or wherever you go in the state of Maryland, once you get the goods, then you're gone. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me, just on the surface of it, that this provides an opportunity to say, as you said, let's get rid of the brain drain. Here's a reason to stay.
Yeah. And this region is primed, if we play our cards right, primed for growth. You think about the super region, they call it, you know, from Richmond to Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. But Maryland's right in the middle. You have the federal government. You have an active creative economy. You have some of the wealthiest counties in America in this state. You have it's the world in miniature. You want mountains? Drive away. You want the ocean? Drive away. You want the beach? There you go. And then the opportunities in terms of the professional fields, the knowledge economy, the construction and development that, you know, is coming. You're already starting to see it in terms of the development of the outer areas. So I think this is going to be a way to continue to invest in people and say, this area is a good bet. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for opportunities, I mean, there's very little that Maryland doesn't offer. We just have to make sure we give people incentives to stay and take away the hindrances from them actually, you know, starting their company or you know, making their mark in whatever industry they choose.
I wanted to get into your business a little bit. Tell me about the conversation that you had with the governor about taking on this job. You have an impressive resume. You know, obviously the Obama administration. You worked here at Howard University, Prince George's County's, you know, school board. Did he call you and say, let's go out for a sarsaparilla? How did that happen?
It was Palm Sunday, and his chief of staff texted me and said, the governor wants to call you today. Are you available? And I said, sure.
Are you going to say
yeah,
no?
No, I'm not, yeah. So he called and said, you know, he mentioned in very complimentary, just saying like he had seen the arc of my career. It was very much focused on service. You know, I'm proud to say I worked for three presidents. I worked for President George W. Bush. The faith-based initiative very much spoke to me as a person of faith then, and certainly for President Obama and President Biden. And so working for people of three presidents, two different parties, serving at AmeriCorps, serving here at Howard, where truth and service is baked into the DNA of this place, I guess that resonated with him. And he asked me to be the first secretary for this new department. My questions were very much, because I had heard him talk about the service year option, it was more asking sort of what his vision would be, how he would define success. You know, this is very much not an ancillary thing. He's making service his signature thing for all the reasons I mentioned and a lot of other reasons I didn't get into in terms of what it does for social cohesion, what it does for competitiveness, what it does for, you know, knitting together a state in these polarized times. So, you know, when he asked, I had to run it up the chain. I was at the Justice Department, had to check with the Attorney General, and, mm-hmm. and the Attorney General was supportive. Because he saw it very much connected to our mission. You know, the Justice Department has a whole unit focused on juvenile justice and delinquency prevention. You know, mentoring programs, after-school programs, anti-gang diversion programs. This is going upstream. And so, you know, he made it clear, like, don't let the logistics of a transition get you to lose sight of this opportunity. So once he blessed it, I was like, let's go. So,
yeah, because I was going to say, and I remember, and he may remember this too, my goodness, 20 years ago, I interviewed him in television, when I was in television, and we were talking about, I think it was his first book. This was a year or so after, you know, 9/11. Mm-hmm. And I remember even after, you know, after the interview, and I can't really remember the details, but I remember how it felt. And my co-anchor and I, and even some of the floor crew, all of whom actually were Morgan State, either interns or graduates, and they said, you know, that guy's going to do something. Mm. And so, and I say that to say, you are now, you know, yes, you're working with the state of Maryland, but you're in the administration of a man who is doing something or wants to do something. Does it feel like Hamilton, where you just don't have enough time?
I do wake up every day just with a sense of urgency, because the governor, he's a fast walker. He reminds me of Dr. Frederick. I mean, it's just like everything needed to be done yesterday. And we're launching in October. right? So that's not that far away. But that's part of the appeal, because you don't always see government, like, move fast. And the need is there. Again, if folks are walking across that graduation stage, I think in the next week it starts, you know, graduation season. And the governor definitely wants to build a model for other states to replicate. And you know, to your point about his experience, what service did for him, mm-hmm. the path he was on, thinking about himself, and what service did for him to compel him to look at, let me think about my responsibilities to other people before I think about what's best for me. And so I'm hoping that this new department taps into that sense that I think so many people have. I mean, everybody wants to be secure in their situation and not have to worry about how to maintain and survive day to day. But beyond that, I do think there's an instinct and a desire to help other people, especially when it's clear in helping other people, you're helping yourself. Mm-hmm. And what kind of community we're going to live in if we're going to see those kids as somebody else's problem or if we're going to see them as our kids.
You are a son of Howard, and as you said, you worked, here in the A building, with Dr. Frederick. What did you take away from here, not only as a student, but also as an employee that you feel is going to help you where you are now and where you're going?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, I learned a ton working here for 5 years. I went to law school here, but mm-hmm. I got my real Howard education. I got my good legal education at the West Campus, but I got Howard educated working for Dr. Frederick.
At the A building,
yeah. And I say this as, you know, like my last week as a law student, I spent in the A building fighting my way out. Mm-hmm. They said I wasn't graduating because I didn't take a class that I had taken. And I had to go fight my way out, you know, was not the best look to leave Howard. So I get it when people want to point out, like, the limitations of that should have never happened, right? And I'm never going to defend that. This should have never happened.
But you know what? Every college student, whether it's Howard or Hampton or whether it's Prince George's Community, there's always something that's going to keep you from graduating that you've got to do the week before graduation.
Yeah. I mean, so it's just like one of those things of like, I'm in the 5 years here, I saw a deliberate focus on we have to get the customer service right. We're not here to haze. We're not here to beat up. We're not here to, you know, frustrate. You know, we're here to serve. And working here for 5 years, seeing folks, you know, who are so accomplished, roll up their sleeves, you know, jump in and try to fix problems, help students, help faculty, help staff. Because of the love for this place, I just take that with me and just have so much affection for Howard, especially now as the seasons are changing and they announced a new president and there's change in the air. I just have so much gratitude. Like Elijah Cummings, before he passed, he was always helping Howard on the Hill. He was, you know, especially when there were efforts to try to cut the federal funding for this place. And he said, you know, if you want to set our people back two generations, take our schools out. And what this school produces, like if you close this one school, half the black doctors in America gone. Half the black dentists in America gone. Half the black lawyers in America gone. Like the country looks different because of this one school on Georgia Avenue. And so, yeah, it has its warts, has its problems. Everyone's doing three jobs, you know, when, you know, because you got to do what you got to do. But where you see a lot of higher ed has become a way that, like, your parents are loaded and I'm your kid, I'm going to be loaded too. I'm going to college to perpetuate, like, I would be fine anyway. Mm-hmm. Where this place, that's generally not what it is. You're taking half of the population that can't pay you. You know, they fill out that FAFSA, it's EFC zero. Your customer base can't pay you, but you're taking them because they're brilliant. And it's going to be bumpy, but you get them through. And that doesn't happen. I mean, look at the Pell enrollment at most other universities. They keep it under 15%.
Right.
As a business model, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, I mean, we could talk about the warts all day, but what happens here doesn't happen anywhere else, especially with black students. So I'm like, keep the door open. We got to keep the door open. And service, too, is a way that I find, again, it's this year of discernment is usually something reserved for people that have the luxury of, I'm good. I don't have to worry about living, mm-hmm. I can find myself, you know. And not to say yeah, this service year is finding ourselves, but I do hope that as people are serving, they do find something that sparks, catalyzes a passion, and reminds them, like, hey, you need to think about others as much as you're thinking about yourself, too. Mm.
Secretary Paul Montero, head of the new Maryland Department of Service and Civic Innovation, thank you so much for coming in again. Congratulations.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher.
You know, and we'll be, you know, watching and how things take off from here. There's definitely nothing wrong with, you know, serving your fellow Marylander.
Amen.
All right. That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, May 16th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.